I'm Chris.
And I'm Kylie. And this is Redefining Resilience,
where we explore what it means to build a resilient lifestyle
so you can thrive in any and every situation. Welcome back.
Welcome.
So in the spirit of mindfulness, one of the things that we've been talking about in the composure domain, and one of the key messages that Lexi shared with us is being present and reflective. And so we thought we would take some time, instead of just plowing through to the next episode, we wanted to reflect on the conversations that we had with Lexi and Rob, in case you missed them, and just recap with our thoughts included and key takeaways, and then talk about where we're headed to next, which is the reasoning domain.
I love this idea.
So glad.
Well, there was a lot of information from Lexi and a lot of information from Rob. I've been thinking about both those conversations quite a bit the last few days. The mindfulness kick is super interesting. The more you think about where you're spending your attention and your time and your focus, the more you realize how it's not in the present. It's a whole lot of anticipation for the future, stress about the past, and very little about current reality.
I think the key takeaway from our conversation with Lexi is slowing down. I mean, even just her demeanor when we were in this room, it was like there was nowhere else in the world that she needed to be in that conversation. And 100% of her attention was given to this discussion that we had.
Which was kind of strange at first. Most people are just kind of fidgety, you know, on their phone, moving around, coughing the whole time, i.e. me. It's just normal to just constantly be moving, you know. She did not. You would talk to her and she'd stare right at you and give you a very direct answer, was very present while you were talking, acknowledged everything that you said, repeated things that you said. Yeah, it was really cool.
And you can tell that's exactly how someone who is living in the present moment comes across. And when you interact with somebody like that, it's really cool because you feel like you have their complete and full attention and they're actually interested in what you have to say. And I can't tell you how many times I was either on the receiving end or the giving end of not being present. And what an opposite contrast to what we experience, because when people are rushing or thinking about the next thing, they're not present. I mean, I had a Zoom meeting today where somebody in the Zoom room was not paying attention fully and they were trying to multitask. I could see eyes shifting around, and then they tried to jump into the conversation and they had misheard and made some false assumptions. And then we had to slow the entire conversation down. And it kind of gives like an eye roll effect to everybody else in the room because it's like, just pay attention the first time. But we live in this hustle culture where it's go, 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 go. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Well, I think the term multitask, well, I don't think. It came out in the 90s when computers became popular in our work and data life. We're just working on a computer, you could quote-unquote multitask because the computer did things for you. The crazy concept is computers don't even multitask. They just do one thing really, really fucking fast and then the next thing really, really fast. They do things one at a time. They can run data in the background, but it's a process at a time.
You have a mouse, not several mice.
Yeah, and one keyboard, right? So for the concept being shoved down our throat that we are supposed to multitask, or like you're a great employee if you can multitask, you end up just being really shitty at a lot of things because you're not dedicated or focused on anything.
Okay, so I went down this rabbit hole of can we really multitask as humans? And what I found and what I agree with is yes, we can. But you can only do one task that re- that requires your conscious effort one at a time. Meaning?
I totally agree. So, yes.
Okay. Okay. But let me explain. So, if I were to read a book, I cannot do anything else at the same time. Now, let's switch it up. If I were listening to a book on Audible and I were doing the dishes, I can do that because doing the dishes does not require my conscious attention. Now, I may miss some like scraps of food on the sides of the pan or something while I'm washing the dishes. That's very likely. But that's also very likely if I wasn't multitasking, I think.
Not at all. What are you talking about?
So, this concept of multitasking, just know you can only do one task that requires your conscious attention at a time, and then you're like walking. You can walk and talk at the same time. Walking is a subconscious task that you don't have to have conscious effort to do.
So here's a little story that I think is absolutely fascinating. The number one reason we are struggling as humans to teach robots how to walk is we as humans, when we walk down the road, pull in information at such an incredibly fast rate and process it only to like tell us that the ground is flat, that there's something coming up, that there's a car coming behind us. We're taking in mountains of information, but we're also ignoring mountains of information. So when we teach a computer to do the same things humans do, we don't have the ability to shut off the data consumption. The computer's trying to do all of the things at once. So we do have autopilot, quote unquote, mode. Mm-hmm. I think that becomes, I mean, that's why mindfulness is so important, is because we can fall into autopilot so quick. But it's interesting to understand that we don't even have the capacity or capability now to replicate our mind's power, even at our heightened level of technology. So our ability to be mindful is a conscious effort to become more focused because we can occupy the space of autopilot. I think that's fascinating.
Well, and the other reason why mindfulness is so important is because it trains our brain to learn how to focus. I will admit I am diagnosed with ADHD, which we've talked about before, but I have retrained my brain through a variety of different ways to become more focused and to get rid of this culture of distraction and noise that we live in, because there's so much information coming at us at one point, like you said, at one time. We have to be able to sift through all the information and figure out how to focus. And that's really hard to do if we're not practicing, because it's a skill. You have to train your brain like it's a muscle. You don't grow your muscles without gym time.
No, it's impossible. It would be like me showing up to a meet and saying, well, I'm here, I'm going to do great, and never lifting. It's impossible. I mean, you could do it. You could show up. You could be at the event, but you're not going to do very well because you haven't trained anything.
Could you get a shake weight?
Exactly. That's, that's probably what's missing is my lack of shake weight.
Oh my gosh, I've been seeing these vibrating things that you stick on your butt that like flexes your glute muscles for you. I almost sent it to you because I'm like, awesome, I don't have to ever do squats again.
Have you seen the suit that you wear?
Oh gosh,
it's like the douchiest guy ever, and it's this like spandex Superman suit, and he's like doing lunges and shit outside, and it's electronically activating all the muscles around it, and the comments are fucking hilarious. It's $3,500 for this thing, and people are just eating him alive.
And you know what's crazy is like people buy this stuff because they think that there's a quick fix to everything, and I'm sorry to tell you, there's not. You just have to figure out how to enjoy the process and be mindful throughout it. Because if you can learn how to focus and be mindful in the gym or while you're working or while you're taking a walk with your dog instead of burying your head in your phone and being a distracted human, look up. Smell the roses, look at the sun, look at the trees shaking, look at the grass, look at the flowers blooming, look at, you know, your dog smiling in front of you as they step one paw in front of the other. I mean, there's so much goodness if we just take a pause and look for it.
We've just been indoctrinated with FOMO. I mean, the entire social media system is built on making you think you're missing out.
Yeah.
So
that's marketing's job. That is marketing's job.
And they're not some evil giant company that's trying to fuck everybody. They're trying to sell shit, and they're just really, really good at it.
Yeah.
So it comes back to personal responsibility. You have to understand that you have to be responsible for the outcomes, and you have to understand that they're doing their job at a very, very high rate, at a very successful rate, and it's your job to figure out whether or not you want to consume it. You're not missing anything, generally. You're not missing most of anything. In fact, most people, no matter what their situation is, that decide to sit and accept where they are and find the goodness and the happiness around them. I know I've been at, I mean, level zero a couple times. But at those times, I can remember sitting back and thinking, you know, all things considered, this is actually really cool because I have nowhere to go but up. Like, the rest of my life is just progress and a forward progression.
Mm-hmm.
So being mindful is kind of a foreign concept to some people. Kind of seems woo-woo or silly. But I challenge everybody that listens to this to at least try it for a week. 7 days. You could do 10 minutes or 5 minutes a day. And in 7 days, I guarantee you, you will at least see a difference.
Well, and you heard with our conversation with Rob, the big theme that he talked about, I mean, my big takeaway was figure out how to be better than you were the day before. And you can't do that if you're not taking a pause and reflecting on what's working, what's not working, where can we make a little tiny adjustment to get 1% better today.
He had such a powerful story because he had stimulus in his life that would cripple people.
Oh, yeah.
A teacher looking at you and saying, listen, you're going to be useless. A parent that wasn't necessarily extremely motivating.
Well, how could he be? You know, he was doing it as a single parent.
Yeah. I mean, just a lot of stimulus that if you look at reasons to not succeed, he had a lot of them.
Every reason not to succeed. I mean, they ran out of money and he wasn't going to let that cripple him. You know, he got a second job and did what it took to get ahead and to put himself in a better position. I mean, he asked himself every single day, how can I get better? How can I make this situation better?
Yeah.
He took responsibility, 100% responsibility. He didn't say, you know what, this is the government's job to give me food stamps. This is the government's job to give me a living stipend and help me out here. No, he said, it's up to me to take care of my family.
It's pretty counterintuitive to the way a lot of people are told to look at life. The victim mindset is such an interesting mindset because it becomes overwhelmingly powerful. Once you allow in poor me, once you allow in I'm the victim of life or life is attacking me, your mind, like we've discussed earlier, is just going to try to validate that. And it's going to do a really good job because there's a lot of negative stimulus. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of hurt people out there with a victim mindset that wants you right next to them. It just validates them.
Well, and it makes them, what's that phrase? Misery loves company.
Yeah.
So the people who are down in the dumps are either going to pull you down with them or they're going to need help and want to do something about it. But it takes stepping out of a victim mindset in order to get to the place where you feel empowered to do something different. And I just think it was so cool that Rob didn't even for a second let himself stay in a victim mindset. And you know, at the end of the day, what the fuck's it going to do for you? It's not going to help you. It will not.
Progress.
Yeah, you're just staying stuck. When you stay in a victim mindset, you just stay stuck and you can't change your circumstances then.
So the most interesting thing about that mindset and not being present is the longer you're not present and the longer you're in that victim mindset, the harder it is to get out of it. I envision it like digging a hole, right? I lived in a smaller town for quite a while around several different people that the victim mindset was just the collective group think. You know, this sucks, life sucks, the world sucks. It's never going to go anywhere. It's going to hell in a handbasket. You know, it was really hard to get ahead. And every time somebody did, you had a mountain of people telling them why it was not going to succeed and were essentially clapping when it failed. So it was really interesting to watch because these people end up in their 30s and 40s and 50s. And I think I lived there for 15 years, something like that. That always boggles my mind when I think about it.
Yeah.
But I look back and the guys that I used to hang out with are still preaching the same tune. They're still talking the same talk. It's just, oh, well, you know, when I make it, or it's this guy keeping me down or this thing keeping me down. It's like, bro, you've been here for 15 years. Like, nothing's keeping you down, man. You're just making the same stupid decisions or not making decisions.
Yeah.
And life's just coming at you at the same speed. You're just doing nothing with it.
Well, and don't get me wrong. Like, there's times where you can get genuinely screwed over.
Oh, yeah. We are.
That's not something that I'm unfamiliar with. You know, I've had several situations where objectively I got the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I look back at those situations and I'm like, thank God. You know, I don't know how many people out there have had a situation where you had a compensation agreement outlined with the boss and then they didn't pay you when you did a fan-fucking-tastic job and you earned the compensation that was laid out for you. You know, this has happened to me a couple times, and I have to imagine if it's happened to me, it's happened to other people. When this did happen to me, I had several other people say I had the exact same situation happen. You know what? There are shitty people out in the world, but thank God I had these shitty people screw me over, because I would not be where I am today, running my own business, multiple businesses, and super successful in life. Like, I owe them a thank you.
So one of the most powerful things I think Rob said was he doesn't give advice. He just watches people. He just watched people function. Hey, why are they doing this really stupid thing? Or why are they doing this really great thing? I'm not going to repeat the stupid things. I'm going to repeat the great things. And he just, without even thinking about it, had like the maximum amount of composure and reasoning skills a human can have, and then the tenacity to understand, hey, listen, these were great. They might be hard, but these decisions equal a great outcome. And these shitty things might be easy, but they equal a bad outcome. So I avoid the easy, bad outcomes, and I attack with fervor and excitement the good decisions, the hard things, and I get a great outcome.
Because he knew it was going to help him fulfill the vision. It was all about keeping the vision front and center in his mind. And if something got in the way of the vision, he was going to figure out a way to get around it. If something challenged him, he was going to figure out how to get past that and do better on the other side of it. And if the vision changed, that's okay. He was going to figure out how to make sure he preserved the things that really mattered the most to him, which was his family and raising pigs. I mean, it was so simple the way he put it.
He also talked a whole lot about things that he loved to do. So he understood his talents. So I've been harping a lot on LinkedIn, if anybody follows me on there and sees these posts, but the difference between skills and talents, communication is a skill. You have to learn to be good at that. There are some people that are just talented communicators.
Like me.
Of course. That's why I looked at you when I said it.
Yeah.
But like me, I have had to take a lot of time watching TED Talks and talking to people and learning how to communicate correctly. I started writing a whole lot, and that helped me formulate sentences better, longer thought processes, how to communicate more clearly. That's a skill, and it's an ever-developing skill. The talent that Rob had was he just loved working with pigs.
Yeah.
And as silly as that sounds, he knew he could make money and he knew he could do well because he loved it. Talked about the things being in his grandkids and kids' hearts. Baseball's in their heart. Pigs are in their heart.
Yeah.
That just means he understands that people have talents and talents should be cultivated.
Yeah.
But it doesn't ignore the fact that skills need to be worked on. I thought that was absolutely fascinating.
For the record, I did hire a public speaking coach, so I'm not naturally this gifted at communication. I've had to work on it a little bit.
Well, that's good to know for the rest of us humans out here.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I also liked talking a lot as a kid, so talking was in my heart.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it was. My mom used to tell me I wouldn't shut up, so.
Used to? Shout out to Lori.
Hi, Mom. Yeah, so I think excellent takeaways from Rob, and I also loved what he said about watching what people were doing, watching the successful things that people were doing. Just as an example, you know, we're talking about how to implement videos into our social media strategy. And instead of us like purchasing some sort of like quick fix, ready to roll video production plan, whatever bullshit is popping up on, well, now it's probably going to pop up on all of our news feeds.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, but I've probably triggered the algorithm somehow. But instead of us doing that, we just looked at some other coaches in this space and said, okay, what do their videos all have in common? And thank God we have a great operations guru behind the scenes here at Odyssey Resilience. She did some research and just quickly found some common themes. And it's like, all right, cool. Now we have some general guidelines on how to do this. And it doesn't have to be perfect. That was another key takeaway that we got from Rob, is just good is good enough. Do something, see how it works, and then revamp it.
Well, you can only refine something if you start it.
Yeah.
You can't refine shit you don't do.
Well, and you can't perfect something when you don't even know what the market wants. Like, if you're new to something, you've got to figure out what works, what doesn't. Let's refine it as we go and learn from what the data is telling us. And I was on a entrepreneurial reality show a year and a half ago or so called The Blocks. And in this reality show, there were a lot of like entrepreneurial lessons. And one of the big lessons that they taught us on the reality show was you have to build, measure, learn, which just means build something, put it out there into the world, measure the progress, and then learn from the data. And that is general protocol with, I think, just about anything. You're trying a new diet, do the same thing with the diet. You're trying out a business plan, do the same thing with the business plan. Marketing strategy, do the same thing. Coaching strategy, do the same thing. I mean, shit, a workout plan, same thing. There's nothing here that is groundbreakingly innovative. There's not going to be a secret sauce to anything. It's just figure it out.
So I hear this a lot, and anybody that gets into the fitness industry or working out as just having a good time, you're going to hear this. Like, how did you get there? What's the secret sauce, bro? What do you have to do? What's the one thing? It's like,
work at it for 20 years.
Yeah, the one thing isn't sexy. The one thing isn't fun. The one thing isn't a one size fix all nonsense. It's just fucking consistency. So if you're consistent at selling t-shirts with waffles on them, which by the way, those are going to come out soon, you'll do well. it's just a matter of consistency. So when I first started lifting, I was about 175 pounds. I couldn't deadlift 135. I was a pretty shit athlete. I could squat like 95 pounds, like a quarter squat. Like, it was, I wish I had videos because it was pretty bad. I had no ability to move the bar. I just didn't have any idea what I was doing, but I loved it, right? I was an okay bench presser, so I just bench pressed all the time, worked my triceps all the time because that's all I knew how to do. But the more I got into it and the more I was around people that were good at what they did, I was humble enough to say, listen, I am totally lost when it comes to these other movements. Can you help me? Or what knowledge can you impart? Or I would find bodybuilders and say, how did you get this lean? Like, just, I don't even want to play in your sport, but I'm so enamored with the fact that you're so good at it. How do I become better? What can I learn from you?
Okay, so let's take a pause right here because this is a really important skill and we're about to get into reasoning and we're going to talk about being resourceful. But what we're talking about right now is resourcefulness. Asking for help is not a bitch move. It's a smart move.
Well, it's one of the smartest moves you'll ever make because you just think about your lifespan. You have, what, 80 years, 90 years? You only have so many viable years to make mistakes and figure things out. Why not leverage everybody else?
Yeah. There's so much information out there. You're silly not to ask for help or lean on the experts that have figured out how to shortcut the process.
Or just figured out what equals failure. Like, and failure is such a cool thing. Like, it is so awesome. It's emotional. But it's emotional because it's volatile. It has like a lot of power behind it because failure is an edge. You have found out where you cannot pass right now. And you get to figure out how to pass it.
Failure is data. If you can just think about failure as data, data is objective. Data you can manipulate to fit the narrative that you want to. So you can either say, oh, well, I only got 50%. Or you can say, heck yeah, on my first try, I got 50%. Next time I do it, I'm going to get 60%, and then we're going to keep going from there. Awesome. I was talking to a business owner the other day, and he said that he hit, you know, 50% of his goal year one, and now he's at like 400% of his goal year two of being in business. And it's like, if he had just given up after year one, not seeing the results that he thought he could see his first year, what a missed opportunity that could have been. And now he's well on his way to building a successful national business. How awesome is that?
Well, it also explains why pivoting and having the reasoning skills is so important. Because you have to look at things, and the thing you might want to have blown up, quote unquote, or like take the world by storm, just might not be the thing that works. It just might not be. And that's fine. So you pivot a little bit, change some things, maybe the color of the t-shirt or the area of the gym you're in or whatever.
Instead of waffles, pancakes?
Yeah, I was thinking bacon.
Definitely bacon.
Yeah. We
have to have a bacon shirt for Rob.
There's no doubt.
Okay. No doubt. Rob, you're getting a bacon shirt.
I will ship it to you soon. But you just have to be able to pivot and not be emotional about the pivot. I know when I opened my gym, I learned so much about rules of owning a business, how to pivot for your crowd, how to stay the course, how to not go to war with companies, how to find a niche and stick with it. Which were really important things. And at the end of the day, the gym failed. I mean, COVID knocked us out. We could not survive it. So that was a huge failure. But at the end of the day, I look at my future and go, what an awesome set of circumstances that I got to learn in my 20s that people in their 50s have no ability to or understanding of.
Well, and the cool thing is that now when we rebuild another gym, which we will. It's part of the vision. When you get your gym again, you are going to be able to run that thing like a machine because you know what works. You know what doesn't work. You can take in all the data from the last time you did it and learn from that and apply it.
Well, it also gives you a much more comfortable feeling, understanding your failures, understanding how you got to your failures. We're going to caveat on that in a minute. To make better decisions, be more confident in the decisions you're going to make because you understand how to avoid the failure. Now, failures are only great if you pull in the data and remember the data. Repeating the same mistake over and over again is really stupid.
Yeah.
So
that's borderline ignorance.
When you make a mistake, there should be enough data where you can literally write it down and avoid it. You can find out how you got there, where the stimulus came from or whatever happened to equal this outcome, and avoid it. Every great business fails at certain things. Every one of them. IBM failed at a lot of stuff. Apple's failed at a lot of stuff. Google's failed at a lot of stuff. What do? They pivot. They learn. They take in the data of the failure and move on.
Remember those iPod Nanos?
Yeah, I had one of those. Looked like a tampon.
Yeah. But if we hadn't had those little Nanos, we probably wouldn't have Spotify right now. Or Napster. Remember Napster?
Oh, yeah. Metallica does, too.
Yeah. If we didn't have those, we wouldn't have Spotify. I mean, think about how the world has evolved and what cool innovations have come from the greatest mistakes ever.
So there's a movie called Meet the Robinsons. Have you seen that? It's a kids movie. I love this movie. It's super funny. But in one of the scenes...
You didn't even wait for me to answer. You're so excited about this movie.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
Well, we'll watch it tonight. Don't worry about it. In one of the scenes, he creates a peanut butter and jelly gun, right? It's a kids movie. Mm-hmm. And he fires a peanut butter and jelly gun and it explodes. And he's looking at this big family, and he's like, oh my God, I can't believe I failed in front of everybody. They're all going to laugh at me. And then they all stand up and clap. And like confetti comes down from the ceiling and they're like, yeah, you failed. And the kid's like, what the hell's going on? The whole family's like, this is great. You've learned what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like you're one step closer to success. I'm like, that is so cool, man. What an awesome cartoon.
I totally agree. It's a necessary part of the evolution of learning. And I think the more we can learn, the faster we can make good decisions and become more efficient with our thought processing. So that's all about that. I mean, that's what we're going to get into with the reasoning domain. The reasoning domain is all about how we think through things. And so why we've had to really dive deep into composure is because you cannot think through things when you are losing your shit. You don't do your best thinking because your brain legitimately turns off the part that does the thinking. When you're in a stressful situation that causes you to panic, your strategic thinking part shuts down. So what we're trying to do here is help you build that muscle in your brain that's going to help you tap into the best thinking that you have available. So that's what we're going to get into with this next domain. Chris, you want to tell us a little bit about what the skills inside of the reasoning domain are?
All right. So these skills are, they're actually going to be really cool to dig into. Introspection, which is probably one of my favorite ones in this whole domain. Resourcefulness, prevention, and planning. Those go together for several reasons.
I love planning.
Yes. And adaptation. All part of the reasoning domain. So we're going to dig into all of those, give you our interpretation of, and maybe even have a guest or two.
Oh, yeah. We will be bringing in some more awesome experts to speak on some of these topics. And as we continue to move through the six domains, we're also going to be revisiting some of our past domains because we never want to ever say we're done learning about the vision domain just because we're on the reasoning domain now. We're going to bring guests back to talk about vision. We're going to bring guests back to talk about composure. And then as we continue to move through the model, we're going to have guests resurfacing in all six domains. So that's what we're about to get into in the next episode. So come back for more if you want to learn how to do your best thinking.
I'm super excited. It's going to be fun.
Yay!
Thanks for listening to Redefining Resilience.
To learn more about building your mental and physical readiness, check out odysseyresilience.org.
And follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok.